Blog Talk Radio.
Texas on Monday, April the 4th, as we like to do on Mondays. We'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We're going to concentrate a little bit today on this, on the media. We talk a great deal about the media, but I think there's a couple of big stories here that need to be debated or talked about. And then, of course, Hunter Biden being one of them. And then Hillary Clinton on Meet the Press on Sunday morning. So we'll talk about that. We'll talk about lots of things going on in the media today, including the departure or apparent departure of the press secretary at the White House. So let me say hello to our good friend Bill Katz. Bill, we're about to get a storm, one of those big storms that we get here in Texas. So hopefully the lights won't go out, Bill.
I hope not. I hope not. The weather here is very calm. Looks very bright outside. I will have my mission after the show ends to go to the supermarket, which is exciting. Oh, so exciting! And we will wait for the next storm, which will be predicted for about a week before, and people will buy out the batteries all over White Plains, New York, and then we will get 1/10 of 1% of rain, and that'll be it.
Well, we believe, we don't like to believe in conspiracies, and I know you don't like to believe in conspiracies either, Bill, but I think there is they're talking about the fact that Beto O'Rourke may be behind this storm.
Yes.
To blame it on the governor if the lights go out, Bill.
Well, I would not be surprised if Beto says that. I'm just surprised he's around. You know, I mean, how many hints does he need from the general public to stay out of elections? But I know he's running again, and he's pretending to be a moderate. That will be this week. Now, depending on the polls, that may not go into next week. But one of the things about the Democratic Party is how weak it is on candidates. There are really very few stars that they can point to. I think the one they can point to who has become a media darling, AOC, is exceedingly unpopular around the country. But, you know, you'd think they'd work on attracting the best people. But the problem is the best people do not function well in a party that is dominated by its left wing, where you have to basically pledge allegiance to Karl Marx.
Or to identity politics. Yeah, identity politics is really killing the party because it's not attracting the best and the brightest when you go strictly on the basis of identity. Bill, there is a big story that I wanted to put on the table today and get your thoughts in, and it has to do with the media and Hunter Biden. But I want to begin with another media story. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was on Meet the Press yesterday, and she was there for a long time, as I understand. Got a lot of questions. Some of them, some of her answers were pretty serious. But she didn't get a single question, Bill, about her campaign in 2020 or 2016 when her campaign was found, guilty, had to pay a fine for this dossier that was going around. She didn't get a single question about that, and I couldn't believe it, Bill. I thought Chuck Todd was better than that, Bill.
Well, I think that the left wing in journalism is really battening down the hatches right now and trying to avoid what is obviously a series of scandals that occurred in the last 5 years, five, 6 years, that in turn involved the press covering them up. If they liked the person, the scandal was just covered up. If they didn't like the person, as in the case of President Trump, the scandal was exaggerated. In fact, well, there usually was no scandal, but they convinced us, or at least tried to convince us, that there was. Now, the key point here to remember is that there is polling going on regularly about people's attitudes in politics, and some polls do deal with the question, if you knew this before the last election, would you have voted for the same candidate? Now, I know of only one poll that was taken that actually said, if you knew about the troubles or the charges against Hillary Clinton or the charges against the Democratic Party and the stories going around about the suppression of Hunter Biden's role, would you have voted for the same person? Now, I don't recall the exact numbers of that poll, but they were sufficient to make it clear that Donald Trump would have been elected president. And that right. is the one thing that the press is afraid of, to be accused of switching or causing a presidential election to be switched because of something you withhold when everyone knows you withheld it for exactly that reason. That's an industry killer. I mean, if the press gets that kind of a reputation, its already low standing will get even lower.
Right. Well, what I find is fascinating is that, you know, Donald Trump loves to use the fake news slogan, and he uses it all the time. And, you know, I've said before in these chats with you that I think sometimes he goes overboard when he criticizes the press. I think, you know, he gets a little bit too silly, frankly, in some of the criticism. But when you look at the Russia story, when you look at this thing with Hunter Biden, when you look at this whole last week, we were being told that they were looking for 6 hours of the missing Donald Trump. Where did he go for 6 hours? You would have thought, those of us old enough to remember, that it was like reminiscent of the 18-minute gap, you know, back
oh,
in
yes.
the Nixon Watergate days. I mean, you would have thought they had Bob Woodward. They were asking Bob Woodward about, you know, is this another Watergate? And the whole thing fizzled, Bill. I mean, the whole story fizzled. There's nothing to
yes.
it. And yet they keep going back. It's like they have a playbook, Bill. They have this playbook that every time they hear something about Donald Trump negative, they got to jump on it, and they got to just go crazy with it. And it's insane because they cannot be helping the credibility of the media, Bill.
Right. Well, I don't know why they don't seem to care so much about their credibility, because there are so many polls taken where the media comes out very low on credibility. And you would think that as people who have some pride, they'd want to do something about it. But I don't think they see their role any longer as reporting their news. They see their role as changing society, purifying it into what they want it to be. And if it takes a little loss of credibility, well, so be it. If the goal is accomplished and they get their candidates elected, why, they must feel that's a small price to pay.
Yeah, well, that could very well be it. I don't know this for a fact, but I wouldn't be surprised if there is some real tension, though, inside the newsroom between the people who are serious, who actually want to do news, and all of these people who are being driven by ideology. Because I know that if I was a reporter and I kept watching stuff like this, I would be very uncomfortable working in a newsroom that was not driven by news, but rather driven by ideology. So I'm guessing that there must be some tension in some of these newsrooms, Bill, as well as the fact that their ratings are collapsing in such numbers that you would think there's a lot of people wondering if they're going to have a job in 6 months, Bill, especially at CNN, Bill.
Yes, well, that's absolutely correct. You know, the newspaper industry, specifically the newspaper part of the news industry, went through a very bad period in the early 1960s when one newspaper after the other was closing. I recall a big article in one of the major news magazines called Death in the City Room. And there was plenty of death in the city room. I mean, New York City once had seven major newspapers. Today it has three, the New York Times, the New York Post, and the struggling Daily News. And this has happened all over the country. And it was traced really to the growth of television news, that people would rather get their news from television, and there wasn't enough in the daily papers to keep some of them alive. And I get the feeling we're going through another period like that now, but for entirely different reasons. Today, they can get all they want on the new, on the television and or the radio. They can get newspapers. They can get the internet. And I just think they feel that the sources, the major sources that they were brought up on, are no longer credible enough to be listened to. I do feel there is that effect. There used to be a slogan, every kid learned it, don't believe everything you read in the newspapers. Well, I think that is very much with us today. We may not have a slogan for it, but I do believe there is a skepticism about the press that we haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah, so I agree with that. I mean, you just talk to people. I mean, you talk to people and they tell you that the press is this or that. I mean, there doesn't seem to be that respect for the work they do. But let me bring you back to the Hunter Biden story, Bill, because I see two potential outcomes, and I like your reaction to this. I see two potential outcomes here. The first one is that they connect the president to the son, meaning that they find out that the president was benefiting somehow. Again, I don't have any evidence of that, but that's a potential outcome. But I think a more likely outcome, Bill, is that they don't find a direct connection, but a lot of people are going to be asking the question that I'm asking is, why did President or then Vice President or Joe Biden enabled this kind of corruption around him? Because there's no question that Hunter Biden was using the father's name to get business.
Of course.
And it's like you're sitting there saying every family, or I mean every public official in the history of politics has had to deal with it at some point where there's a family member that gets out of control. And you've got to call him in and say, that's it. You're not going to get any more favors, and you're not going to travel in the plane anymore, and I'm not going to enable this anymore. But it seems like in the case of Joe Biden, I'm not saying he took a dime, but he certainly made it possible, Bill, by tolerating this kind of activity with Hunter Biden. So I think a lot of voters may say, okay, you didn't make a dime, but you made it possible for this corruption to exist, Bill. That's kind of my theory. I kind of like to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, I think it's a good theory. And remember that he was making this money often, Hunter Biden was, in countries that are hostile to the United States, especially China. I mean, now, the game that will be played when this comes up is, well, China really isn't an enemy of the United States. There are some people who would like it to be, but it really isn't. And we never saw it that way. And they will convince a certain number of people that, yes, we're not at war with China, and maybe it was simply seen as a trading nation. And, yes, they will look at their Apple computer, which says made in China, and say, well, everybody else is dealing with China. What's wrong with it? I suspect that if it comes out that they nail him and don't nail Joe, that the press will make the story go away by saying, well, he was making some business deals in some unsavory country, but who wasn't? And also, by the time this information is developed, we have to look at the clock, look at the calendar. I suspect that Joe Biden's first term as president will be nearly over, and that he probably will not run for a second term anyway. And so the thing will be mooted in a way. It's the old slogan of the post-60s generation, move on, let's just move on. No one's interested in this anymore. I think Hillary Clinton used to use that phrase a great deal. We're ready to
move on.
Yeah, and that's the way it will be. They will have to come up and really nail him with something very specific. And the specificity might revolve around not whether Joe Biden knew and when he knew it, but about the sheer amounts of money. I mean, the figures that are being quoted are in the millions. These aren't small bribes or small town, I'll pay the parking commissioner $1,000 if I can get a parking clearance for my restaurant. I mean, this is in the millions. This is nation-scale corruption. And I think that more than anything else, the anger that while Americans were going through a pandemic, while many Americans were unemployed, that the son of the president was making this kind of money in hostile countries. I don't know if you really have to tie it to Joe Biden. I think people will make their own decisions about that. No matter what the Justice Department says, they'll say, come on, you can't have a son making this kind of money using your name and you're not knowing about it. That's ridiculous. There's a level of absurdity that even the public will not accept.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think people are going to say, well, he was in the airplane with you. He took
sure.
these trips with you. I mean, maybe you were just bringing him along for the ride. You know, you wanted your son to experience first-class travel or something like that.
Yes.
But, you know, when the son who doesn't have any experience in energy ends up being on the board of directors of energy companies, and when he's introducing his business contacts to his father, the vice president, you know, Bill, there are many countries in the world that operate and think differently than we do. I think in the United States there's a higher sense of or higher standard of corruption than in most countries. But in many countries
yes.
of the world, if you say, here's my father, the vice president, I think a lot of lights go on saying, my gosh, we got our way in. The vice president's son, and this is our way in. You see what I mean? It's a mindset
of course.
Of corruption
oh, yes. oh,
that exists in
absolutely.
Many countries. That we don't have here, thank God. You know, I think you know we have corruption, of course, but it's not quite to the same level, Bill.
I think you're right. You know, it's interesting that during the discussions, which I think are going to erupt again about voter corruption and election corruption, the American press sounded so shocked that anybody would bring up the subject. Why? That's an assault on democracy. But I remember the days when it was simply assumed that elections were stolen in certain places like Chicago. Nobody would be shocked in the 1960s when I went to school there, or the early 60s, that an election was stolen. The only question that people would have on election night was how many votes does the mayor need? And it was asked very seriously. Corruption existed and I think continues to exist in many cases in many states. You get precincts where more people vote, so to speak, than actually live in the precinct. You get the situations which have been the stuff of late-night comedians where people find that relatives of theirs who died decades ago are still on the voting rolls and people come in and vote under their name. That's something that we at one time got used to. We simply assumed in New York, for example, that Tammany Hall had a level of corruption. The heads of the political organizations all had the same first name, Boss. Boss Tweed, Boss this, Boss this one, Boss that one, Boss Daly. It's amazing how many mothers named their kids Boss. In New York, Boss DeSapio, Carmine DeSapio, who was the head of the of what remained of Tammany Hall, wore these dark glasses because he had an eye condition where it made him look sinister. Maybe that was intentional, but he was Boss DeSapio. In Pittsburgh, it was Boss Lawrence. I'm trying to think of some of the others offhand. But there was just an assumption that these political organizations were not on the level. And so when the issue of voter corruption came up in the last election, I don't know if the shock expressed by journalists was feigned or whether they were just people who grew up in a different era. But I'm interested in this story about Hunter Biden developing, if in fact it will develop. You know, the Justice Department can even be completely open about it. That doesn't mean the news media will report the stories. I think you're going to see only the biggest ones reported for a few minutes. And then let's see how the American people react. If Biden by that time is fading and will not be running for another term or couldn't run for another term, the story may be considerably diminished.
It could be. It could be because these things take time. Although something that we didn't know back in October 2020 and that I think would have made a difference is that the investigation had been going on since 2019, I understand. So it didn't just start in 2020. It had been going on before. And that, I think, could have made a difference in the minds of many people. I mean, we forget that the 2020 election was decided by like 50,000 votes in six states. I mean, you change 50,000 votes in six states and Trump is president. That is how close it was. And so you don't know. I mean, maybe people would not have calculated this or would have reacted to the Hunter Biden story. I don't know. But clearly the second debate between between Joe Biden and Donald Trump would have been very different if that information had been out in circulation, Bill.
That's true. And if the moderator at a presidential debate tried to bury the story, the opposition candidate would bring it alive. You know, they in a debate, the candidates themselves bring up issues. You're not completely dependent on the moderator. And we'll just have to wait and see what happens, and wait and see who's running news organizations and who's running the political parties. I just think one of the stories today that is so fascinating is the story of Kamala Harris. She's sitting there listening to a debate in which people are saying, look, we can't remove Biden because we'll get Harris. And I'm sure she has her eye on the presidency. She didn't take this job to be vice president. She took this job to be president. She's not doing much of a job, and we very rarely hear of her actually working, but that is obviously her goal. But I think it's going to be fascinating if Joe Biden does not run again or can't run again and yet is still president, fascinating to see what she does, because they want her. The party clearly wants her out. There are no fans for Kamala Harris.
Now, you know, before we take a break, Bill, I was thinking if I was a relative of Spiro Agnew, I would be looking at all of this saying to myself, my gosh, my grandfather or my father or whatever, they threw him out over nothing compared to this. I mean, the stuff that Spiro, I'm not defending, of course, what Spiro Agnew did, but I mean, it was peanuts compared to this. And here you have, we're talking about millions of dollars. And if I remember back in the days of when Spiro Agnew had to resign, it was peanuts, little stuff that he had done as governor of Maryland. So you wonder, you know, my goodness, if you're a relative of Spiro Agnew, you have to be thinking, gee, you know, they did away with my father or my grandfather over nothing compared to this. So anyway, I was just thinking about that. Not that I was a fan of Spiro Agnew, but I do remember when he resigned and reading about it, and it wasn't that big compared to this, Bill.
Yes, well, there's a lot of unfairness in politics and a lot of unevenness. One person will do something and get a slap on the wrist. Another person will do exactly the same thing and have his life ruined. Remember that during the Me Too period, that Al Franken, the senator from Minnesota, was forced to resign by his party, even though many other people were charged with exactly the same thing. And it didn't seem to matter all that much. It really depends on who you are.
Yeah, or the timing and all kinds of different factors. Well, we're going to take a little break. We'll be back with our friend Bill right after this, and then we got a lot to get into, including inflation. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, I just wanted to mention this briefly because it kind of ties into Ukraine, that on this day in 1949, the treaty that created NATO was approved by the U.S. Senate. So NATO is actually 73 years old today. And when they created NATO, of course, it was against the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact. And who would have believed that NATO, that they would be talking about NATO, Russia versus Ukraine, Bill?
Yes. Well, the NATO treaty grew out of the recognition of unpreparedness before the Second World War. We basically said that we will never be unprepared again. We knew the Soviet Union by that time was making it very plain that they intended to be the world power. Remember, this formation of NATO occurred after the Soviets basically grabbed the East European countries, turned them into satellites. It occurred after the crisis in Greece and the fighting in Greece. It occurred after the Berlin Airlift, which was 1948, when the Soviets tried to keep us out of Berlin, and we supplied Berlin by air, one of the great logistic operations in history, and people have asked why we can't do it again in Ukraine. And it was a reaction to real history. And the fact is that the NATO alliance worked. It worked. Now, maybe not everything was caused by NATO, but the reality is we won the Cold War without fighting a hot war in Europe. And you have to believe that the formation of NATO and the forces that went with it played a great role in deterring the Soviet Union, which was exactly the object.
Right. Now, and, of course, the problem with NATO here recently is that some of the members have not been paying their, quote, their fees, if you will. And that has angered a lot of people in the United States, because I think with the exception of the UK and the United States, most other countries fell in love with the idea of being protected by the United States, and they thought it was for free. And it took Donald Trump to remind them of that. And, of course, they didn't like it when Donald Trump told them, but they had to be told that, though. I think Trump was exactly right in saying to them, I'm defending you for free. You know, when are you going to pay up? And I think he was exactly right when Trump said that, Bill.
He was right, because the standard is 2% of your national budget should go to NATO. And some countries were not paying that, including Germany, which was the richest country in Europe. And it was outrageous. The attitude of Germany was outrageous. Now, because of Ukraine, many countries in NATO are rushing to pay their dues. You know, they don't want to be thrown out of the country club or told they can't play golf. You know, they now really understand how important NATO is. They understand that we have a very aggressive Russia, once again, led by a man who does not hesitate to kill. And all of a sudden, they've become great fans of NATO. And, of course, here's my check. I had it written for years, but I forgot where it was, you know?
Right. I put it in the mail, and I think it must have gone to the wrong P.O. box.
Wrong mailbox. You know, we thought it was paid. Harry, did we pay that bill for NATO? Of course we did.
That's right. Well, they thought, you know, they thought that the P.O. box was in New York rather than Washington, D.C., so they sent the check. And no, but you're right. It is amazing, in all seriousness, it is amazing the number of countries that now want to be a part of NATO, which then makes me wonder, are the American people really interested in protecting that many countries? That's kind of the political equation of all of this. Because, you know, I'm all for NATO. I've supported NATO all my life. But NATO was created to tackle the Soviet Union, not necessarily Russia. So anyway, I just think it might be worthwhile in the next presidential debate to have a debate about this, Bill. I think that would be good for the country to have a debate on exactly what the mission of NATO is in 2022 rather than 1949, Bill.
I think that's a very good suggestion. I think there is a whole new young generation that may be against keeping NATO at all. I mean, what they learn in high school and college is, well, we're not better than in other countries. Why should we do that? Why don't save that money for social justice, you know, and something like that? And there will be a part of the population that will believe that. And I think maintaining NATO is very much in our national interest, but the young generation may have to be convinced of it.
But well, they may be the ones fighting the war, so that's that they should have a say on what goes on. Speaking of Ukraine, Bill, this is day number 40, if my count is correct, 40 days of war. And I'm beginning to wonder, too, how quickly Ukraine is going to start fading into the back pages because of everything else going on in the country, Bill.
I think that's a very good point. You know, we are a television age, and television programs, news programs, are put on pretty much the way other programs are put on. Here it is. This is the most interesting thing that you're going to see today. And after a while, if people do get bored with Ukraine, they will turn it off the way they would turn off anything else. I don't think that most Americans see themselves in any great danger from Ukraine. They may care very much about the atrocities they see on television, but even that will wear off. I mean, there is going to be a time that people will start to lose interest. During World War II, that became a big problem. President Roosevelt, right after the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, theorized that the American people would lose interest in the war, and people were shocked when he said it. He did not say it publicly. People were shocked. They said, oh, no, we'll remember Pearl Harbor. He said, well, you think about a year and 2 years, even if we are at war, people will forget about Pearl Harbor, or at least it will go into their memory. And it was he who encouraged the writing of the song, Let's Remember Pearl Harbor, because he felt that anything that kept the term in the vocabulary was good for the war effort.
Yeah. Well, even more recently, President Bush and the War on Terror, what we used to call the War on Terror, President Bush himself said, you know, 9/11 will soon be 5 years, 10 years, and people are going to forget. And now it's 20 years, you know. So even President Bush said something like that. My sense, Bill, is that it's very difficult to keep a democratically or a democracy at a war pace, because people who live in a democracy, particularly a prosperous democracy like we live and most of the West lives, you know, your life is too good, and going to
war is
not one of the things you want to do. So,
that's exactly right. We saw that with the pandemic as well. People just couldn't wait for it to get over and get back to normalcy. Because life is good in America. And at the end of World War II, we had something called the GI Bill of Rights, which allowed GIs to go to college. And many of them took the government up on it because they wanted those years replaced that they had given to service. They, you know, the idea was you have given a certain number of years of service to your country. We want to make it up to you so that you can go on and have a normal life. So, yes, that idea of normalcy is very important.
That's right. Well, one of the things that is not very normal, Bill, is inflation. The inflation numbers are absolutely horrific. And President Biden last week, I guess, released some barrels of oil. And that apparently has dropped the price a couple of cents, but only for a little bit, because eventually with summer driving coming. But anyway, I guess what the point I'm trying to make is that everybody I talk to, Bill, is complaining about the cost of everything. We had lunch yesterday with a bunch of friends. Everybody's complaining about the cost of everything. People going to the store. I had a friend at church yesterday say, this is a friend at church who said, you know, I used to go to the store and spend $60, and now I'm spending $100. And I have the
same
stuff in my basket. And, you know, when is this going to end? And I really think that's a political problem for President Biden, because when is it going to end? And this inflation is almost like a cancer, you know. It just keeps growing and growing. And they don't seem to have any solution other than tell us that we should drive an electric automobile. That's what we need to do. Everybody needs to drive an electric car, and then, you know, everybody will be happy. So that's it. Let's all drive an electric car, Bill.
Yes, and they don't tell us how to pay for it, of course. That's not really their business. But electric cars are about $60,000, and somebody calculated how many years it would take if buying a $60,000 car to make up the cost of the gasoline that you will not be buying. And it was many, many years. I mean, it's not a good deal. It really isn't. And you're absolutely right about people coming home and saying, I used to buy so much more on this amount of money. And, you know, many people in America are in jobs where the salaries don't go up regularly. They're in the union jobs, which are under contract. And they are really being hurt by this. This is hitting them where they live because the inflation seems particularly bad in food and in automobiles and in oil.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of tough to do without food.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough to do without gasoline. You can always put off buying a new car. Okay, you can
yes.
say, well, I'm not going to get a new car this year. Okay, you can do that. You can put off taking a vacation. Okay, you can do that. But you do have to buy gasoline, and you definitely have to buy food. And everything that I've read, Bill, is that food prices are just going to get worse because, you know, first it was supply chain. Now it's Ukraine. And
yes.
Now it's just like everywhere you turn, there's an explanation for the food prices going up, Bill.
Oh, absolutely. This is Putin's inflation.
Right.
And then it'll be Putin's bankruptcy, and Putin's we can't have orange juice this week, and I mean Putin will be the man in charge of the American economy as far as
right.
the Democrats right. are concerned. But I don't think they're buying that. I really don't think the public
no.
is buying that. They don't particularly like the Biden administration, and they certainly don't like Kamala Harris. And I think that the more they try to blame it on the war in Ukraine, I think the more they will fail.
That's right. Well, certainly the polling data shows that the American people are not buying the excuse. In fact, it's fascinating because the other day I saw a video clip of some people over at MSNBC. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I don't watch MSNBC. I only see the little video clips that they put on the Internet. And there are a bunch of people, there was a panel at MSNBC, and they were like saying, gee, how is it that President Biden is not getting a boost from Ukraine? He's doing such a fantastic
yes.
job, but he's not getting a boost, you know, like presidents always get a boost, you know, when there's a foreign crisis. Yeah, that's when they're not paying $4 a gas, they get a boost, but not
yes.
when they're paying $4
well,
for gasoline.
That's right. And I think, by the way, the question is getting a boost from a war where people are being killed and genocide is being committed is awfully callous. I would imagine that any good party leader would say, "Don't mention it that way," you
right.
know. And it's just not it's not proper. But no, he's not getting a boost. I don't think, first of all, that people feel he's handling Ukraine very well. I'm sure the American people would, seeing what they're seeing on television, would want him to move much faster to getting equipment to the Ukrainians. It's understood there'll be no troops with that, but we have plenty of equipment. NATO countries have plenty of equipment, and I think the administration can be accused of a certain lackadaisical attitude. Also, the American people are being told that at the same time that this brutality is going on, we are using Russia as an interlocutor at the Iran nuclear talks. That's just unbelievable. I mean, you know, this
yes.
is an enemy country that is killing our friends, and we're using them to negotiate on our behalf at the Iran nuclear talks. Now, I
right.
don't know what's going to happen to those talks. It's obvious that there is a huge element in the Democratic Party, a left-wing element, that wants the talks to go through to an agreement, and that the Iranians will then get a lot of money, and they don't care. But the talks are apparently in a kind of suspension, waiting for the Iranians to make some decisions. But I have a feeling this agreement, if it is made at all and comes down as bad as it's said to be, could be a true catastrophe for the administration. It could be the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. I mean, the idea that we are sitting down with Russia, on one hand, you have the president saying that Putin is a war criminal, and then on the other hand, his representative is negotiating in the Iran nuclear deal.
Yes.
I think a lot of people look at that and go, wait a minute, this just doesn't add up Mr. President, this doesn't add up. It's sort of it's just sort of like my next story, the next point I wanted to bring up about Title 42 down at the U.S.-Mexico border. On one hand, you have Fauci, Dr. Fauci, saying, you know, we may have to bring back the lockdowns because, you know, things could really get bad again. And then we're going to do away with Title 42 at the border. A lot of people watch that and they go, wait a minute, this doesn't make any sense. Fauci is telling us to get ready for lockdowns, and they're going to do away with Title 42. And, Bill, if I may say something very quickly here, this is why this administration has so many credibility problems, because it seems like different people are saying different things, Bill.
They are, and none of them seem to make any sense. People, I think, are asking, what's in it for our country? And there doesn't seem to be much delivery of anything. I mean, the defense situation is not good. The foreign policy situation is not good. The domestic economy, while it is certainly growing, that we concede, but the inflation is growing faster, and people are saying, we never seem to get ahead. And that's not a way to go into an election.
No. No, and this whole situation down here with Title 42, Henry Cuellar, who you know who he is, he's the Democrat congressman from the district, he and another Democrat congressman from South Texas signed a letter saying, or did not sign the letter, I guess, on Title 42. They're opposed to the idea of doing away with Title 42. The senator from Arizona, the two senators from Arizona would like the White House to be very careful about this. I just look at it as common sense. You know, if you're going to tell us on one hand that we got to get another shot, another booster shot for the pandemic, and then on the other hand, you're going to open up the border, I think a lot of people look at that and go, this is crazy. I mean, who's running the show here? Who's running the show, Bill?
That's right. Well, that's it. There, you know, craziness is what the administration seems to be about. As I said, policies do not seem to benefit the United States. We have a White House spokesman who is about to leave, a spokeswoman who is about to leave, and she's being employed by MSNBC, which is about as left-wing as you can get in American major journalism. You have public officials in the administration who are not even recognized by the American people. I mean, Tony Blinken is on periodically as Secretary of State, but most people can't recognize him. They don't know him very well. And then Pete Buttigieg, the Secretary of Transportation, who apparently used to take buses to work most of the time, he is getting a lot of publicity now because people think he could be a substitute for Kamala Harris in 2024. I would like to hear Kamala Harris's reply to that.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, and also I kind of like to know what experience Pete has, because he ran a city that was not exactly very well run. And in fact, he was extremely unpopular, as I understand. And so, you know, and he, I don't think he's done a great job in transportation or supply chain. I don't think that's been, he's done a very good job in that. So this is, I think, a huge problem with the administration, is all these different messages. And you kind of get the feeling, you know, we've all had business situations where the head of the company is completely detached what's going on in the company. And that, when you have a situation like that, then that's how you get all these messages, because you have all these people basically on their own. They're managing things on their own. And you don't have that central figure that says, this is what we're going to do. In this administration, you don't get the feeling that Joe Biden is on top of things. Now, I don't get that feeling, Bill, and most Americans don't either.
And that is, I think, a giant subject that, you know, you look at the man when he is making a statement on television, and you get the feeling he is completely detached and not aware of what he's saying. Or if he is aware of what he's saying, he can't get the words out straight. And that is, you know, other countries have in their parliamentary systems something called a vote of confidence. And if the leader loses a vote of confidence, the leader often has to resign and just leave government. And you look at the president now and you say, gee, I wish we had a system that makes it easier to remove a man when he's in office, rather than the very cumbersome systems that we have, because this man is not up to it. Now, the answer that will come back from the ruling class, so to speak, is, well, are you a doctor? I mean, do you have a medical degree to confirm that? And I would say no, but when I see a president who looks half dead, I don't need a doctor to tell me he looks half dead. And, you know, that was the situation back in 1944 when President Roosevelt was about to run for his fourth term, unprecedented in American history, of course. And people at that time, in that era, the press did not report on the health of the president. It was considered improper. So the American people really did not see how sick he looked. And, of course, we didn't have television. You could go to the movies and see a newsreel, but you didn't have the intimacy of television. And so the American people really did not have any good idea of how sick the president was and how bad he looked. But people in Washington who dealt with him did know, and they could just look right into his face, and it was the face of death. And it was then that they started the movement internally inside the government, apparently with the president's approval, to remove Henry Wallace from the 1944 ticket. He was the vice president, and the feeling was that he was much too far to the left politically to be president, and he had to be replaced. And he was replaced on the ticket by Harry Truman, which is how we got Harry Truman as president. So, you know, we have had a situation before where people looking at a president have said he's not going to make it through either this term and certainly not the next term, and we need another vice president. It's not unprecedented. I think that if we get to 2024 and the president is still in office, still alive, and people look at the situation, and if he decides to run again, I think health will be the number one issue.
Yeah, I don't see any way that he runs again. I mean, I don't have a magical, as they say, I don't have a magic glass or anything, but I don't see any way that he runs again, because, I mean, he's not going to get any better. These problems that you're watching on TV, he's not going to get any better. I mean, he's just going to, you know, he's going to get older. And I sometimes, another thing too, Bill, when you have a president that looks like that and as often as bad as Biden does, you have to begin to wonder about the pressure of the office on a man of that age. I mean, look, the office is brutal, whether you're 55 or whether you're 60, but here you have a man who's 79. I mean, the pressure of the office, these trips that he's taking and the pressure that he's under, it's got to take its toll. And it's got to, you know, accelerate whatever decline he has. Let me bring up a couple of quick points before the time flies, Bill. You mentioned the White House press secretary is moving on. And there were some people who brought up the ethics of accepting a job or not accepting a job from an organization that was asking you questions at the press office. Do you see any problem with that, or is that something that people are making up, Bill?
No, I think it's a legitimate, a very, very legitimate point. You know, it's not only the reality of ethics, but the appearance of ethics. And whether she was acting properly in her negotiations with MSNBC or any other news organization, she was in contact with these news organizations on her own behalf. And I think the appearance alone makes it illegitimate. I think she should not have done this. She should have resigned as news secretary and then taken her chances in the marketplace. But I assume she wanted the security of a new job and wanted it in the news business, and that's why she went ahead and did what she did. And there does not seem to be much of a backlash.
And in all fairness to her, that is a job where there's a lot of turnover. I mean, we've seen this in other administrations where the press secretary usually burns out. And you can understand why, because, you know, they're doing this every day. And they're the ones that they're basically reading. The White House tells them what to say. And so it's probably a very stressful and difficult job. But I think you're right. I think she should have resigned, taken a couple of months off, and then show up at MSNBC later, like apparently she's going to do. Bill, another big story this week that I want to touch here at the end is what is happening at Disney, where the company has gone crazy woke. in a way that is, I don't know, I've never really understood why a company would go that woke in such a way. Look at what happened to Major League Baseball when they took the game away from Atlanta. I mean, Major League Baseball paid a very heavy price for that.
Yeah,
look at the NFL when they decided to go woke. They paid, or the NBA, they paid a price for that. And here you have a Disney, a company that, you know, they depend on families to take their kids there. And now apparently they're no longer going to refer to people as boys and girls.
That's right.
I guess they have Mickey Mouse now will have the option of choosing a pronoun. I mean, this is crazy. It's just absolutely crazy, Bill.
Oh, of course it is. It is illegitimate in any moral sense. People are paying enormous amounts to go to Disney World or Disneyland. You would think they'd want to do something about that first and make it easier for people to come. And once they get there, they're going to get a political lecture. And they're going to get all these examples of gay characters and this character. I don't care if they're gay characters, but the Walt Disney Company has always stood, as you point out, for family values. And to show contempt for the very thing that built the company is wrong on their part. I mean, it just shows the arrogance of this group that is running Disney right now. And it is apparently, they basically control the company. They're interested in certain things that sexually, and they're going to impose it on the public. Now, the question is, will the public buy it? I would really wonder whether the ticket sales for Disney World go up or down. And I have no idea, because it may be that many families are kind of insulated from the debate and aren't really aware of what's going on.
Well, I think a lot of families are, because I hear this from young families, that it is very expensive to go. That, you know, going to Disney World or Disneyland is you know, ridiculously expensive. And I think that probably is a factor as well. But when you have the president of Disney or that whatever the title is of that lady who was on video saying that half of the characters have to be LGBTQ whatever, well, first of all, that doesn't even look like the country to begin with.
No.
And that's the absurdity of it.
Wasn't it awful also, I'd like to bring this up, wasn't it awful that she discussed her children's sexuality in public? Aren't the children of the country entitled to privacy? These kids are going to be adolescents in 5 years, and everyone in their classes is going to know all about their private sexuality. I mean, she's a mother. Doesn't she have any sensitivity? I think she's just a fanatical activist and doesn't care. I thought her behavior was terrible.
It was, and I thought the film, I mean, the video that we saw, I don't know whether that video was meant for public consumption. But anytime you make a video these days, you have to assume that it's going to show up on TV. So you got to be careful with how you say these things. But I was very disappointed with her for the reasons you stated, bringing up the sexuality of her kids. She's talking about a 6-year-old kid. You know, I used to have kids like that, and sexuality was the last thought in my mind at that age, Bill.
Yes. Yes, that's right.
I mean,
that's right.
Yeah,
It's amazing that no reporter brought it up. Improper that was.
Right, but they did bring up when DeSantis signed the law in Florida. You would have thought it was the end of civilization once he signed that law.
Isn't it amazing? Because all the law does is protect children against having sexual subjects brought up in the first 3 years of their education. That's about as mild a law as I can think of. I mean, most parents in the country are in favor of that law, unless people lie about it, which is what they do. They tell you it says one thing, when in fact it says something else, which was done about the Georgia election law when Major League Baseball decided to abandon Georgia. They did it on the basis of a false description of what the law stated. And I think the Disney story is fascinating, and I do believe that they're going to be hurt by it, but I
absolutely
can't be sure.
Well, I think it was Ben Shapiro who recently said that the Democrats are doing a great job of getting Ron DeSantis elected president. Because
they are.
Because you know, they keep they keep, DeSantis keeps to be taking positions that families like or parents like. And, you know, as you mentioned in a previous podcast, Bill, you mentioned going to war with the mothers in the country is not a good electoral strategy.
No, it wasn't. It didn't work too well in Virginia. It really
did. No, it did
not. Now, I don't know who they're going to go to war against next. Are they going to go to war against the kids? I mean, maybe
I guess so.
We have to patrol these children because they're a danger to America. I mean, the party is just so totally distant from any reality, you know?
That's
so,
right. And that's they don't seem to have a lot of common sense, as Rudy Teixeira said in an article recently. Bill, as always, thank you for your time. We didn't get the rain, but maybe we'll get it later. But anyway, have a wonderful day, and thank you for being with us. And again, keep up the great work at Urgent Agenda.
Well, thank you. I look forward to our next conversation, Sylvia.
I think we'll talk about Disney again.
Oh, we will.
All right. Talk to you later, Bill.
Okay.
Our good friend, Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day, and we'll talk to you later.